Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ayler, Sports 5-9 of the Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. Boy, the stakes tonight, the weight of this, right? Battle of Alberta. Whew, honestly, get a little bit chills even just talking about it. Elimination game. The entire reputation of the city of Calgary on the line. Who better to talk about it with than our next guest, Mark Messier, Hockey Hall of Famer, six-time Stanley Cup champion, six times, current ESPN analyst, and author of No One Wins Alone. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Good to be on with you guys.
Absolutely. So let's just tap into this a little bit, okay? Like, you're an analyst now, right? You're six-time Stanley Cup champion. You're what are you feeling tonight, like, with this matchup? Like, what's the just emotional vibe in the Messier home right now?
Bringing back a lot of great memories, to be honest with you. Yeah. I'm not sure if anybody saw the series going the way it has to this point, but Edmonton is a great position. They're beating a strong Calgary team with some speed and finesse and incredible skill. And Mike Smith has steadied the ship the last month of the season. Was great in the first round. His numbers showed it. And I thought that if his numbers could get to reach the point where they were the last month of the season and in the first round, the Oilers were going to have a good chance against Calgary. And sure enough, that's what's happened.
See, that's what I wanted to hear. Not just that answer, but at the end when you said we're going to have a good chance, I'm like, yes, you actually get to do that. You know, sometimes we, other members of the media, we say we, and we only, by the way, we only do that as fans when the team is winning. When the team loses, it's like they are losers. When the team is winning, it's like we're amazing. You know, like our team is amazing. Our team is amazing. That's always the way it works.
The bandwagon?
That's just called, yeah, being a fan. Like, that's just what it is. But yeah, no, I love guys like you being a fan of a team and like actually having emotional stakes in this. And that is what is so palatable about this matchup, right? Is you're watching these games, you're seeing the fan reactions, and yeah, you just see how deep this rivalry runs, how meaningful it is to people, and the players seem to understand it in the series. And I wonder, when you said it's been surprising you, I totally agree with you. Like, no one did see Edmonton up 3-1. I've picked Calgary to win two games that they've lost both of. What has been the most surprising thing to you?
Well, I actually, before the series started, I picked the Oilers to win in six games, so I thought that they did have a chance, and a real good chance. I think for me, the one of the turning points of the series was the first game when Calgary got out to a big lead, and then Edmonton was able to storm back and score six goals, and I think in some way that kind of gave Edmonton a lot of confidence. They knew they had to shut the door and can't be allowed 8, 9, 10 goals a game in order to win in the playoffs, but they have been able to do that. And I think everybody expected it to be a high-scoring a series, even with as good a goaltending as Markstrom is and has been, and the way Smith played down the stretch. Both teams have, you know, incredibly talented, high offensive players, and as we're seeing in this series, it's next to impossible to stop McDavid, Kane, and Dreisaitl line. You're going to only have to, as they say, you can't stop them. You can only try to limit them. But it's so true. They are incredibly talented, playing the game at a level that we have rarely seen in our sport. And they're making a really good, strong defensive Calgary team, you know, looking inept at times, which is incredible to say. But you know, the series is a long way from over, in my opinion. Calgary's coming home right now, and their sole mindset right now is is to win the next game. And if they do that, then obviously it's going to be a jump ball, because nothing's assured just because you have home ice advantage from here on in.
So you mentioned the type of excellence that we're seeing, and rare, but you were a part of a similar type of excellence when you played. You had some big names, a part of the Oilers, history and the type of dynasty. Do you see any similarities between the team that you were a part of and what we're seeing with how McDavid can control the game? And you said that line with Dreisaitl, and does it bring you back a little bit to the lines that you've been able to play for with that Oilers jersey?
Well, the whole series, I like everybody else, was so excited for the Battle of Alberta. And I think when we talk about the Battle of Alberta, one of the reasons why it's so compelling now is both teams are really good. Both teams have very good players. And that competition, not just aside from the bragging rights that everybody wants to have at the end of the series, but you know, both teams are really good, you know, and both teams are trying to win the same trophy. That's what really kind of elevates the rivalry. So from that standpoint, yes, I'm seeing some similarities for sure, because Calgary, a massive team that, you know, was designed to be able to beat the Oilers in order to get out of the Smythe division and move on, you know, back in the 80s. You know, the team he had to knock off, obviously, was the Oilers for a long time. So, you know, that competition that Calgary gave us, at least, made us a better team. And I think you're seeing that in this series. I think one of the things that I was so appreciative of playing my years with the Oilers is our role players and how important they were to our success. And I think, for me, anyways, watching this series, the role players from the Oilers have an impact on the series. They have a real role in the outcome of the game. And I think, you know, the coach coming in and kind of, you know, giving him that, the bottom six, if you will, the role players, that responsibility has really taken the Oilers game to another level. And, of course, they're being led by their superstar Connor McDavid and Dreisaitl and the core of the team. But without the role players playing at a high level and contributing in every way, that no team can win. And we're seeing that with the Oilers for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, it's funny because the Oilers let in that goal the other night, and obviously it's just like, it's a, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And I really did think that the Oilers teams of the last couple of seasons, that goal maybe breaks them or it changes the game, and they just have other guys that show up, they stayed tough, and they end up still winning. And that was a bit of a surprise to me, and I think that speaks to a little bit of what you're talking about is, like, there's just more jam with their group this year, it would seem like. But you mentioned McDavid, like, he's leading them. It's got to make it so much easier to play your role when you have a guy who is just doing that. Like, he has 25 points in 11 games. Like, it's a playoff game.
Yeah,
like,
no,
11 playoff games.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable in the way he's playing, and the speed and the skating, the edging is just incredible. But even more impressive than that is his you know, deep desire to win. You can just see the way he's playing. He's doing everything on the ice that you would expect from your leader. He's playing physical. He's finishing his checks because, you know, every team, when they go into the playoffs, they all talk about finishing your checks. Well, you know, if the best players aren't going to finish your checks, why should I as a role player? So he's leading that way. He's playing with a fire in his belly that is inspiring to not only his teammates, I'm sure, but to, you know, the whole fan base and every hockey fan that's watching around the country. It's incredible to see. But, you know, the Oilers, getting back to your original point and not being, you know, upset with the third goal or the fourth goal that went in the other night, the long one, you know, the Oilers have been kicked in the teeth for a lot of years now. They got kicked in the teeth again this year. And I love a team that has had to face some adversity throughout the regular season. I love a team that's had to, you know, face themselves and ask themselves tough questions. And they've had to do that for a long time now, and especially this year when they got off to a great start. You know, they faltered in the middle of the season there, and, you know, the world was coming to an end, and they were able to right the ship again. And those experiences hardens you. It makes you tougher. It makes you more resilient. It gives you a better appreciation of what's in front of you and what the possibilities are as a team. And I think what we're learning now, and I think what, you know, Leon and Connor and Nurse and the core of the team are learning there is that, you know, you have to be reliant on the guy sitting next to you all the way down the lineup. We need everybody in order to win, and that's the beauty of our game. You can't win alone. As great as Dreisaitl and McDavid are right now, they can't win alone. They need the participation of everybody, but they also need the buy-in and the belief of everybody, and it's up to them to make them feel that way.
Again, you can get Mark's book, No One Wins Alone. It's available right now wherever you can get them. And, even when you're talking, it's like, yeah, you've been in these games, obviously, and you won six times. So you will understand that depth matters more than anything else. And you're watching these guys with that astute eye of, hey, okay, this is what's different with them. This is how they're tougher. This is more resilient. And I guess this is just kind of like my last one, though, simply on McDavid, which is normally when we do the whole, like, comparing guys across generations thing, I find it kind of awkward, even as a sports radio host, where it's kind of part of the job is to find storylines and story angles. But It like the feeling I have watching McDavid and watching him do this in the playoffs with some of the stuff that you're mentioning, like the skill, the speed, the quickness, the way that he just makes like defenders freeze almost, where I'm like, is he moving faster or is he slowing other guys down? Like, are they frozen? I can't tell sometimes what he's doing, the stick handling, everything, the edge work, you mentioned it. I saw a headline today where it's just Connor McDavid is breaking the game. And that's how I feel sometimes watching him. And I wonder just for you as someone who was, yeah, is one of the greatest players to ever play this game and who played with a guy whose nickname is the Great One. If you ever thought we would see like this level of skill in this sport with what we're seeing from McDavid right now.
Well, I think the whole sport has evolved incredibly over the last, 25, 30 years. Certainly over the last 10 years, equipment technology has made the players, better, stronger, faster. The training is better. We know more about nutrition. We know more about the actual how to train to play hockey. And I'll stay on the point of, our skates and our technology and our skates are so incredibly advanced that it's allowing the players with all this power to really maximize their stride and turning radiuses. And of course, we're seeing it at the highest level with McDavid, and it's not technology alone, obviously, but it plays a big part in it. But, like any great player, and certainly Wayne starting with Bobby Orr, who really revolutionized the game from his skating. I mean, he just skated by everybody in his era. Wayne came in and his edging and turning and his anticipation just kept the opponents at bay because he could recognize where their weight is, how they could transition. They just couldn't turn and stop and keep up with him. And the same thing we're talking about with McDavid, he can beat you with flat out sheer speed, but he can beat you in a phone booth. And it's amazing that as good as Calgary is and as good as the other teams are in the league, I mean, he's literally working in a phone booth and turning, and players cannot get a hand on him, let alone a stick on him. So it's incredible to watch, to be honest with you. And I can really appreciate, where his game has gone to from a competitive standpoint and as a leader, what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I was too young to watch the, your championship Oilers teams, but this is like getting to watch McDavid when you talk about Bobby Orr is like, this is what I kind of feel like we're watching right now. And I know that's kind of, it's like, it's early on in his career and he hasn't won Stanley Cups yet, but this is how I feel like it would have felt watching Bobby play, where the skating and the it's just like, oh wow, this guy has taken something to a different level. And same thing with Wayne and with Wayne Gretzky, where you go, oh, this is just like a different evolution of a player. And it is going to change the sport. And I do you think that it's like, it's too much to be saying like, we're watching a guy who's going to be, 20 years from now referenced with those other guys in this way of just, yeah, game breaking.
Oh, no question about it. I played with so many players and a lot of great players that never won a Stanley Cup. Just because you haven't won doesn't mean you're not a winner. In every regard, off the ice, on the ice, the way you live your life. I mean, so because we're at the mercy of everything around, we're at the mercy of so many, things that we can't control. Decisions that are made from ownership to management to coaching, the players around you, and that's why when I retired, I was so grateful for the experiences I had because of the people that I was surrounded with and the help that I had, throughout my career. And when you look at McDavid and his trajectory and the disappointments they've had in Edmonton, to me that only enhances his stature in the game because of his perseverance, what he was willing to go through in order to get to the pinnacle of winning a Stanley Cup. And, of course, it's a long way from getting to that point for the Oilers to win a Stanley Cup. But I think we can all appreciate, what he's doing right now on the ice, off the ice. His leadership is growing by the day. The intensity that he's playing with. I mean, he wants to win. It's recognizable when you watch the games. And it's one thing to, want to win. It's another thing to do the things that are necessary in order to win. And I think we're seeing both from Connor right now.
We're talking to Hockey Hall of Famer Mark Messier. He's also the author of No One Wins Alone, which has a lot of lessons on leadership and teamwork, how that you know, expands beyond hockey as well, but especially with your experience in hockey. And you just mentioned with Edmonton, you know, kind of that learning to do things that maybe don't come to you naturally. And that's part of that growth and development and leadership. We had you on earlier in the season, and you felt pretty strongly that the Leafs would be able to grow in that same way after first round playoff exits in 5 straight years. And that was true for you anyway, with Mitch Marner in particular. Now, they've had another setback in terms of another first-round exit against, obviously, a very good Tampa team. Mitch Marner seems to have taken that step in terms of playoff performance. But now that this is, you know, another year in, and it's 6 years of getting bounced in the same spot, has your confidence in the Leafs' ability to eventually figure this out changed at all?
I think the Leafs took a massive step forward this year in understanding what is actually entailed in order to play Stanley Cup winning hockey. I think the last few years when they lost, I think you could all point to it and say that they're not committed to playing the type of hockey that is needed in order to win in the playoffs. And if you ever are unsure of that, you know, just rewind and watch the game four of the Tampa Florida series, and watch Tampa Bay play the game from the start of that game to the finish. The sacrifice, the blocking shots, the detail over their game in every area, defense, offense, teamwork, the way they play together, the way they support each other, the leadership, the goaltending. You're looking at DNA championship right there, and when you do win, that's a benefit of winning that you have over the rest of the league, is because the lessons that you've learned and knowing how far you can take it and how far you can push yourself and what you're willing to sacrifice for the guy sitting next to you, that's the level that you need to get to in order to win in the Stanley Cup in the NHL. I'm not sure about other sports. I'm sure it's the same thing. I don't know. I've never played another sport. But I know in the NHL, without that, you're not going to win the Stanley Cup. You're not going to back into a Stanley Cup. You're not going to win a Stanley Cup because it's your turn. You earn the Stanley Cup. That's the only way you win. And to me, when I watched the Leafs this year, I noticed a remarkable difference in the attitude and in the body language of Marner, of Matthews, of Riley. They were playing at a much more intense pace than they had in the others. It would meant more. The sting hurt them more. The loss hurt them more. And those are all the things that you hope that our teams or help the teams grow. And so for me, they got beat by an incredible hockey team with a lot of championship DNA and a goaltender. Maybe they're going to go down as the best ever. So I don't think there was any shame for the Leafs losing this year, because I saw massive growth, and I think they're going to take this into next year, hopefully, and really kind of take that next step. Would be my guess.
So, Mark, we obviously saw that same growth with a lot of the younger players, and the maturity level, I think, grow a lot throughout the season. And one of the major outcomes of the playoffs was we got to see Jason Spezza really lean into that leadership role, being the emotional and also vocal leader. But I want to ask you if you think that maybe that could be a little bit harmful for the Leafs, having an older guy who might be at the end of his career being the main voice of the team, when you have a whole leadership group that didn't seem to be contributing as much. Or is that something that, you know, you've played with before and it is really driving in terms of the youth on the team?
That's how the young players learn. They learn through experiences. They learn from guys like Jason Spezza standing up and making an emotional speech to the team, because it matters. You know what I mean? And it's genuine. It's authentic. And you got to strip it down. You got to leave your ego at the door. You got to, you know, there's just so many facets in order for a team to win. I look at Billy Guerin when he went to Pittsburgh. You know, they traded for him. He had won a Stanley Cup with New Jersey, and the voice, the adult in the room, if you will, when he came to New York, and the support that he was able to give Crosby, and the impact that he had on that team is immeasurable. So you need it from a lot of different angles. Of course, you know, having elderly players on the team that can still be impactful on the ice, and then have that kind of experienced leadership role to support, you know, the younger leadership on the team is critical. And it can come in many different forms, and you just never know where it's going to come from. That's the beauty of playoffs. The players emerge and do incredible things that you never thought were going to happen and get the production from people that you never thought would happen. And that's the beauty of playoff hockey is, like I said many times, you make your money during the regular season, but you make your name in the playoffs. And we see it every year. Players just emerge as incredible playoff performers. They don't wilt under pressure. You know, they take on leadership roles, and everybody gets sucked up into the vacuum there. So that's why it makes Stanley Cup playoff hockey so compelling for the fans.
You would know. Again, your name's on the cup 6 times. You played with a lot of different guys who won. Mark Messier, current ESPN analyst and author of No One Wins Alone. Thank you so much for making time this morning.
Great to be on with you.
Enjoy the game tonight. Mark Messier. Great answers from him. I think that there's a lot there. I agree. Leaf Stars, maybe this is kind of the one that ends up pushing them forward. But then he's also talking about depth and other guys having to step up in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Leafs are at that point right now where they go, okay, we know what you have in your star players, and those two guys are ready to take that ascension in terms of Marner and Matthews specifically. How are they going to be able to find the other pieces that do show up in those big spots? Because they've lost a lot of those pieces, and some of those guys have aged out. From their primes, right? Like, the windows have changed. This is what we were talking about earlier with, like, hey, you did miss an opportunity when Hyman was controllable. You did miss an opportunity to win when you had guys like Nazem Kadri on cheaper contracts that were different contracts. Can you continue to move out players like Jake Muzzin and expect to have that? Expect to have those, like, players who fit the role or who fit the mold and show up and step up in those spots. And I feel like that has been the issue with the Leafs to a certain degree. And even with the fan base sometimes. It's like, yeah, no one's really been arguing that the Stars aren't good. There's been some, certainly, like, are they chokers conversation? But now we're seeing that evolve. It's like, yeah, that usually is with great players, is time after time after time, if you keep getting those opportunities, that eventually the numbers start to regulate a little bit or normalize or level out, however you want to put it. But the formula underneath is just like, That to me has really got to be changed. And can you win with those salaries at the very top? And now it's 5, because now you got to throw Morgan Rielly in there too. Can you win with those 5 salaries and be able to find that depth if you're not hitting on draft picks? Like, if you're really not hitting on players that are coming up through your system, what does that look like? Can you find that jam in those guys? And frankly, like, with those younger players, even if you do hit on one or two of them, how are they going to fit the timeline now with 2 years left of Matthews, right? Like,
right, like Matthew Nyes maybe coming in at the end of this season after finishing his college career. Like, we wouldn't be expecting to see him until right before playoffs. So, there's a little bit of growing pains, most likely, with that. And he can be, as we wanted, a massive impact player. But still, like, you lost another year of him because he went back to school. So that's another year of opportunity to play with Matthews and to learn from him. So yeah, it's, you got to hit on some draft picks other than Matthew Nyes and Nick Abruzzese.
I actually saw a blog yesterday where someone was like, hey, next year, and they could have Abruzzese and Alex Steves and Nick Robertson. I went, yeah, that's probably not it. That's probably not the mix. Anyway, I feel pretty confidently about that one. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's make some picks. Our sponsor. New sponsor for the Wake and Rake. Welcome to the team,
Unibet. Big day.
Big day. Big day for the Wake and Rake. New sponsor, Unibet. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And let's do the Wake and Rake, presented by Unibet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 FM.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of actors.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
Wake up, you piece of shit!
It's the Wake and Rake. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It's time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Welcome to the team, Unibet. Wake and Rake, it's our best bets for the day. It's our best picks for the day. It's a look around all of yeah, our night, our slate of gambling yesterday. You know, I thought yesterday was going to be. I think Blake suffered what? Like, listen, that's a bad beat. Like, Ailish, yours was over the second the game started. Like, the tip off,
they
tipped the ball off, and then there were no points, and you had the over.
It was like gym class.
You know it's bad.
Look, I have no leg to stand on with crying bad beat because I've been so bad in this segment lately. Like, overall, I've been fine, but in this segment, it's just I'm ice cold. I'm going through it a little bit.
Yeah, but that one though was like Blake needed a win so bad, and he picks a plus money, and I go, I really believed. I went, this is the right play because this is the better team. And I thought Colorado, they're going to play desperate because they know they can't go back to St. Louis. They lose this game at home, and it's going to be what we talked about. It turned out to be a different kind of hellscape that they're going back to where they had the – but that's it, is they were up 3-0. And I'm going – I'll admit that I tuned out of that game at 3-0, and I went fully into Celtics Heat. I was just watching Celtics Heat. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm doing a little score check, checking out my other bets, scrolling around – seeing how we're doing in my under Yankees bet, is that's what I went to go look at. By the way, it hit. Yankees got no bodies, by the way. Might be a little preview about one of the teams.
Gallo back today, though.
Yeah, one of the,
Gallo back today. He's free from COVID.
Oh, no. How will I ever survive?
Their worst performing guy is back.
Exactly. No, Aaron Hicks is their worst performing guy, but yes. So I'm looking around, I see the scores, and they have blown it, and I go, unbelievable. Then McDavid scores that goal, that brilliant goal, and I go, Blake has this.
McKinnon.
Sorry,
McDavid.
Yeah. Sorry.
Same thing, really, at this point, eh?
Someone's looking ahead to the next opponent, like the Colorado Avalanche were.
I was excited about the matchups. So we see that goal happen, and I go, Blake's going to get off the schneid. It's still going to happen for him. Still no. Tied overtime. Tyler Bozak, the rest is history. Awful. So, yeah, Wake and Rake only goes 1-2 yesterday. My first 5-under hits. I'm sticking with first 5-unders today. But let's go with the Blue Jays, because that's what we've been riding nonstop, is Blue Jays first 5-unders. And I've said, you bet the streak until it's done. You bet the streak until it's done. Bet the streak. Bet the streak. I've been getting straight up rich off of Blue Jays first 5-unders. It's like, it's the thing that's carried me through everything, is that every night, it's just, hey, a guaranteed win night with Blue Jays first 5-unders. Got to tell you, on Unibet right now, Blue Jays first 5-under, it's a stay away for me. I cannot play this tonight. I'm scared of that Angels offense, and I'm still a little scared of... I'm still a little scared of Ryu. The total for the first five innings is under 3.5 on Unibet right now, +118. So plus number there. It's just too low. Four runs from that Angels offense. They were pretty cold last night. I think they only scored two runs. But if you look at the Angels lineup right now, like if you go through it and say, hey, what has changed? Because we talked to Morosi earlier. Hey, would we talk about Mike Trout more if they were good? Blah, 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 blah. You go through their lineup right now, and it is just killer after killer after killer. Guys who are all OPSing like 800 or more. You've got two guys that are MVP caliber talents right at the top in Shohei and Mike Trout. And all of a sudden, there are other bodies like Jared Walsh and Brandon Marsh and Anthony Rendon, and you're looking at these guys, looking through it and saying, sorry, I don't know who some of you are. Well, guess what? They're all mashing right now. They're all hitting around Mike Trout and around Shohei Ohtani. So for me, the idea that those guys could put up four runs in the first five innings alone is not an impossibility here. I just don't think that this is a good value play tonight at 3.5. So yeah, to me, this is actually I'm breaking the streak in terms of my own streak, and I will be staying away from the Blue Jays first 5-under today.
It's a really tough spot for Ryu. Like, he's made two starts since he came back, and both of those were good underplays. One run over 4 2/3, none over 6. But forgive me if I'm not 100% convinced on Ryu being back just yet. You also, JD, you mentioned it individual by individual. At a larger level, the Angels are the best offense in baseball. They're better than any other offense by...
That's the better way of putting it, is the way you just did it.
They're a little worse against left-handed pitching than they are against right-handed pitching, but I don't think that Ryu is we haven't reestablished Ryu quite enough yet to go that route. So it's decent value getting plus money on the under, but yeah, it's a no bet for me. It's a stay away. Ailish, do you have a feel on it? Because I have some interesting player history things that might get you guys interested.
I'd rather hear the player history because I got some props that I'm interested in. Obviously, Vladdy, I'm hoping, is a little bit of a prove it type game. So I've been eyeing those props.
So we'll get to those props in a second. Again, the Blue Jays tonight are +133. So you bet $100, you win $133 to beat the Angels tonight, who are -159 with Shohei Ohtani on the bump. Pretty heavy favorites. And the total is sitting at -105 for the over 8 runs and the -115 for the under. So a little bit more juice in the under.
Not to be too complimentary of our new sponsor, Unibet having sliders for the run line and the totals, innovative. Instead of looking at a list, being able to just move the little cursor around and see how the line moves, innovative. I love the visualization component.
Nice. Okay, so Blake, what do you have for us in terms of props you're looking at or numbers that stuck out to you when it came to the individuals in this matchup?
Yeah, the big one is Anthony Rendon has hit Hyunjin Ryu very well in his career. Not necessarily a big sample, but we're talking 3 extra base hits and just 13 plate appearances against him, as well as a single. So you're looking at an OPS of exactly 1 against Ryu in his career. So that's an interesting one. This is an interesting kind of go against the streak or go against the history play. Mike Trout's 0-10 against Ryu. I don't think Mike Trout would go 0-10 against any pitcher in baseball if you gave him 10 plate appearances in a row. Maybe
honestly, that's terrifying. That's a weird one where it's like the data is telling you that, hey, this is a good spot for you, and all I'm interpreting that is he's going to destroy him tonight. Like,
On the Jays side, Matt Chapman and George Springer both have some pretty good success against Shohei. Obviously, both of those guys spent some time in the AL West, so they would have seen him. The issue you'd run into there, at least in Springer's case, is a lot of that sample is a little older, and Ohtani has dramatically improved over the course of his major league career. But Chapman's 4-for-12 against him with a pair of walks and a pair of home runs. Other than those two, not a lot of Jays samples. A lot of guys who've only faced them one start through. So Chapman and Springer get the plus. Rendon gets the plus. Mike Trout gets the big old circle of, ooh, this feels like a correction game because nobody has Mike Trout's number.
Yeah, I will say that Ryu's number of over 3.5 strikeouts is kind of appealing to me tonight. It's only 3.5 at -132 on Unibet, and I'm looking at that and saying, yeah, you know what? That's not so bad, but here's my favorite bet from this game tonight. And it is the Los Angeles Angels to have more hits than the Toronto Blue Jays. -139 for the Angels to have more hits. Like, I'm sorry, Blue Jays, but it's Ryu versus Ohtani. And this Blue Jays bullpen in the state that it's in, granted it's a rest day, but there's still no Tim Mesa. Their lefty that comes out of the pen right now is Ryan Barucki, who's, like, no offense to Barucki, but his career was basically almost over. A couple of weeks ago, we weren't really sure what he was going to be. Now he's a leverage guy. Phelps has been good for this bullpen, but he shouldn't be a number two. Or I guess if you put Adam Simber there, I just think that you're getting the best offense in baseball versus one of the offenses in baseball that's struggling, and a pretty strong discrepancy between the two teams when it comes to the pitching matchup. Where the bullpens are at, the Angels bullpen is rested too. Like, again, they lost in a big game yesterday where they didn't have to use their best arms. I just think for -139, again, we look for value. I'm trying not to be a hater but it's like, yeah, Blue Jays, I don't think that's a good number for the Jays at +155 to have more hits than the Angels. Mm-hmm. The Angels at -139, that feels like great value for more hits.
Jays hitting 12 points worse as a team than the Angels in terms of batting average. Obviously, we don't care about the OBP here because it's a straight hits play. And then batters are hitting .205 against Ohtani versus .288 against Ryu. And again, the Ryu sample's noisy with 2 games before and 2 games after the injury, but .205 against Ohtani is a pretty remarkable number. And the Jays, again, they're hitting worse than the Angels. They're bottom 10 team by batting average. Maybe you'd look to the last game and be like, well, not only did they have 8 runs, they had a million guys on base .
I just think it's good value. Mm-hmm. It's one of those ones I always say, if you lose a bet, can you look yourself in the eye when you lose the bet? If I lose that bet, I'm going to be able to look myself in the mirror and say, yep, it's fine. Like, I'm okay with that.
Another similar wavelength would be the lead after five innings. The Angels to have that -122. But if you feel even spicier, the lead after three innings is plus money, +108 on Unibet for the Angels. And obviously, if you're thinking Ryu's not going to be in there past five, or he's going to only play five or six innings, and you have Shohei locking it down early, those are two plays that, unfortunately, we're betting against the Jays quite a lot on this one, but that's just the way she goes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I'm gonna stay away. Like, I don't mind the Angels bet for me, again, because I get to do both things, which is still bet with my head and my heart, where I go, the Jays can still win a game where they have fewer hits. They just have to have their hits leave the yard. And that's what I'm hoping for today, is that Vladdy finds himself against Shohei, and that he prides himself on this matchup, and that we see a little momentum moving forward. So, yeah. Blue Jays tonight against the Los Angeles Angels. The team.
Vladdy home run +400.
Not enough for me.
Mike Trout +340. That feels like a guarantee.
Not Mike Trout. No, he's 0-10. That's also bad value.
It's guy time.
Shut down. Guys get shut down by him. You know what I hate about Mike Trout? Like, okay, is just he walks so much that playing total base props and stuff like that with him is a little. Our home it's runs is
difficult.
Just it. It's like they're gonna put you on, and he's gonna get the Barry Bonds treatment at times. Although this is the case for lineup protection, right? Harder to do that when the rest of the team around him sitting. Okay, over to the Battle of Alberta. Oilers at Flames, do or die for Calgary. And the line reflects the desperation for the Flames. It's -157 on the money line. +150 for the puck line. So -1.5, you win by two goals. Calgary +150. And the total juice is on the over. -122 for over 6.5 goals. +100 for the under. Ailish.
You know where I'm going with this.
I honestly don't. Yeah. I think that you're going to go with our Oilers, but tonight I'm back on my Flames tonight, unless the Oilers win.
Then
it's my Oilers.
I love that. I'm hoping for more games. So obviously I think, you know, the Flames being able to get back here would be great, but I have bet the over on the Wake and Rake the last, I don't know, two or three games, and it has hit. And you always say you ride your streak again at 6.5. It's been very consistent. But there are some other things that I like. A McDavid anytime goal, +112. McDavid over 4.5 shots, which he basically is almost a shoe-in, +110. But him to just receive 1 point, I thought this was hilarious. Just McDavid to get 1 point. -770. That's probably the craziest thing I've seen in terms of 1 point in the NHL game. So if you think one of those points will be a goal, the value is betting anytime goal +112. But any point in general is -770, which is
It's outrageous. It's really, really, really wild that he is that much of a lock for a point. Again, he is 25-11. So you can understand that is the juice on this, because, like, what are the books supposed to do? But it's absolutely not a play that you can make. Like, you gotta have a Floyd Mayweather type of bankroll to be rolling on this one and be putting crazy money down. And even at that point, it's like the second they drop the puck, you got to be thinking, oh boy. To me, it's like I like Calgary tonight. And again, I will admit that a little bit of this is betting with my heart, because I want some more games in this series. But I liked what I saw from Markstrom down the stretch of the rest of that game. And Edmonton just did the thing that they do, where it's like they jump down their throats immediately in the last game, and it's with that mistake that Markstrom makes, right? And all of a sudden you're playing from behind against this Oilers team, and then all of a sudden you're down multiple goals, which means you're opening up your style of play a little bit more. I think Calgary gets to their roots a little bit tonight, and they just say, hey, we're not going to play the same kind of hockey that the Oilers want us to play in this series. How did we get here? How were we favorites in this series? We're going to play that brand of hockey. We're the deeper team. We've got the better goaltender. We've got the better blue line. You would have gone through this thing and you would have said check, check, check to everything Calgary ahead of the series. I don't think that Edmonton's in their heads. I think that McDavid is putting a lot of pressure on them. I think he's opening things up for his teammates. I think Edmonton's feeling great about themselves. But to me, Calgary gets this done tonight. I've picked them incorrectly before, so keep that in mind. But I don't see them. I don't see them quitting on this game. I don't see them choking in front of their fans. I think it's a huge legacy moment for their top line, and those guys absolutely have to show up better. But yeah, I feel actually okay, fairly comfortable tonight as a lean for the Flames at the -157. I do feel like it's such a close series that I'm not, even though it's been like these are the scores 9-5. 9-6, 3-5, 4-1, 5-3. Like, there's only been one game that's gone under in the entire series, so your overplay is one that looks pretty good. But even despite the discrepancy in the scores, I think that I'd rather play it safe with the money line tonight with the Flames than go with the puck line.
I will say, with the over-under, obviously the first two games in this series, no question overs. Then you get an under. And even that last game, I know there was 8 goals in the total, but 2 of those were incredibly fluky, with the Nugent Hopkins one off the Markstrom misplay and then Anderson's shot from his own end, and there was an empty netter in there. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that game was played more like an under game, just with a lot of fluke going on. Now, the counter to that would be like,
well, 2 unders in a row.
Markstrom has also been, though, like fluky thing prone as this series has
gone
on.
And it's an elimination game, so pulling goalies potentially 3-4 minutes left.
6 minutes left, let's go.
Trying to, you know, get things tied up.
If you're down multiple goals, I don't think Daryl Sutter is ever going to pull his goalie, by the way. Like, you got to remember who the coach is. Daryl Sutter is
unequivocally... No, you're down one goal.
Yeah.
And you pull your goalie a little bit early and... You know, you have some time after.
I'll make a side bet with you right now. If the Flames are down,
no.
If the Flames are down a goal, Daryl Sutter will not pull his goalie until it's like the tooth. I'll give you 2:35, and I'll take it will not be until 2:35.
I kind of agree with you, unfortunately. So,
but that's what I mean. It's like there's no
not a bet I'm
no
willing
way.
To make.
I'll even drop it lower. I'll say like 2:15. Like I just there's no way that coach does the thing where it's the early goalie pull down one. Multiple goals, you get crazy, right? Like if you're down two goals, who cares? You can pull the goalie at the 5-minute mark, the 4-minute mark, but it's still Daryl Sutter. It's the Flames. It's just I don't see a scenario, even in an elimination game, where they get nuts with the pull.
One thing I like about Unibet is they have player matchups in terms of points. So McDavid versus Goudreau, McDavid to get more points, -167. But if you think that Johnny's going to have his night tonight, +120. They also have a matchup between Leon Draisaitl and Matthew Tkachuk, and then a matchup between Lindholm and Kane. So interesting little player props where you can do some, you know, head-to-head matches, which I really like.
Yeah, I would say that probably going with McDavid is a pretty smart play there. Like, if you just look at the value of things where you go, all right, well, do you think he's going to have one tonight? And it was at minus whatever it was, 700
770.
Something. That's just probably a smarter way to play McDavid tonight is, multi-points are always better, but I think that the juice is pretty heavy. But just to outscore Johnny Gaudreau, who... has not been scoring a lot of points lately. I don't mind that bet. Okay, so over to our best bets. Ailish Forfar, are you making the over in this game your best bet?
You know I am. Riding it, ride the hot streak. I want to see goals. I just totally believe in even the flukes. The flukes happen. This is the Battle of Alberta. It's always spicy. I'm betting the over, putting it back in the Wake and Rake. Don't do me wrong, Old Faithful. So betting the over. Let's see some goals.
So speaking of streaks... I'm red hot with my under first 5 innings bets, whether they've been Blue Jays or other teams. There's a bunch of them that I like tonight. I will share them with everyone because people have been freaking out going, JD, please give us more of the under first fives. JD, we want more under first 5 inning bets. Because, I do fashion myself I do tend to lean to looking for the unders rather than the overs, but I will play them both if the story does make sense or if the numbers do make sense. There's a few games tonight that I very much like because they're good pitching matchups. And what I like looking at is good pitching matchups historically and then some offenses that are scuffling a little bit. So, I like Eric Lauer, Adam Wainwright in the first 5 under. I also like the no runs first inning in that bet. I like Aaron Nola and Kyle Wright. But those offenses can be a little dangerous. But Acuna looks like he's not going to play. And he's dealing with something. So that one, I don't know if he's necessarily out yet. or whether or not he is actually going to play. So here's where I'm going with this sucker. I'm going to go with the Yankees and Rays under 4.5 for the first five innings. It's a little bit of an earlier game, but it's my guy Nestor Cortes who strikes out everybody. So when he gets into trouble, he can find a way to get out of it. And you go, well, JD, it's Ryan Yarbrough on the other side of it. And yes, it is Ryan Yarbrough. I don't feel great about Ryan Yarbrough because unless he's playing the Jays, he's a pretty mediocre to bad pitcher. But here's the reason why I'm doing this. Stanton hurt. LeMahieu hurt. Donaldson hurt. I watched that Yankees lineup yesterday. I looked at some of the names in there. And if I don't know who is playing for the Yankees, multiple bodies who are not playing for the Yankees, a team where they finished with a final score yesterday against the Orioles of 2-0, I'm just going to keep looking at that. I think Nestor Cortes is good enough to navigate that lineup pretty easily. It's not a crazy good lineup. It's especially one that tries to draw a lot of walks, which is a lot of, I think, going to be called strikes tonight. So I'm going to go with the Yankees and Rays, first five, under 4.5 runs.
All right. That's I mean, our guy Nestor Cortes. Never mm-hmm. a bad time to tune in. And Yarbrough, I mean, they're not going to let him go deep anyway. He's not an opener. He's more of a, you know, short stint starter, like more of a Stripling kind of guy.
But this is a first five thing, right? So
I know, and I was just going to say though, if he doesn't make it out of five anyway, like if there's a team you trust to manage a short starter appearance, it's the Rays. They generally do well with that. They're kind of the innovators of the opener, and Yarbrough's gone three consecutive appearances allowing one runner fewer because they give him a hook as soon as you need to. So you don't benefit from having a worse pitcher here, but the short leash is actually a positive for Tampa Bay where it would be a negative for a lot of teams. My best bet, I'm going to baseball as well. I'm going to go with a Herman Marquez under 4.5 strikeouts against the Washington Nationals. This is a bet on Marquez having a pretty tough game. The Nats aren't a huge offense, but they're one of the lowest strikeout teams in baseball. They're third lowest. Marquez K's under 8/9. And the big thing here is Marquez throws 50% fastball, four-seamer and sinker mix, and they average close to 95 miles an hour. On pitches 93 miles an hour or higher this year, the Nationals are by far the best at hitting the high velocity stuff this year. So Marquez, not a big strikeout artist, potential for the Nats bets to go off. And yeah, I don't see it. Marquez relies too heavily on a fastball that doesn't get swings and misses. And this is an offense that doesn't really strike out much. You could play the Nats over 3.5 if you really wanted. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm going against Marquez here. Not a big believer in that guy, even though he has hit the over on strikeouts a couple appearances in a row, he has not pitched well in those games, and he's been against more strikeout-prone offenses.
Yeah, 39 strikeouts on the season for Marquez, a guy that I really liked last year, and is off to a pretty rocky start in a year where pitchers are doing very well. So that's Blake's bet. Mine, again, is the under 4.5 in the Yankees-Tampa Bay Rays this afternoon, and Ailish Forfar, the most fun one, which is the over in the Flames and the Edmonton Oilers this evening, the Battle of Alberta. The Wake and Rake, of course, has been brought to you by our brand new sponsor, Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Unibet.ca is where listeners can sign up and find more information. When we return, Dan Shulman, back on the Blue Jays talk. What does he see tonight? Is it Vlad versus Shohei? Is it Vlad versus Trout? Is it just one? Is it both? What do we got? It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.